Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Tucky, and today I'm joined by Andrew and Rob.
Hello.
I have no idea why you sound so enthusiastic. What's going on here?
If you're not enthusiastic, you'll die. Welcome to Britain.
See, here's my problem.
Is that sarcasm?
Here's my problem now. I don't know if I'm Andrew or if I'm Rob. Which one am I this week?
Rob Drew.
Are you having a bit of an identity crisis?
Yes, I'm thinking I'm a skinny white guy who just ate a bucket of chicken and has guitars.
It was a chip butty.
All right, chip butty then.
And gravy. Ooh,
chicken. Do they do chicken butties? KFC, get on it.
They do. They do.
That is.
Anyway. Tucky has a topic for us this week.
Oh, God.
Not the chocolate kind. That's it's a bit nutty, a little bit fruity. Yes, it's live-action Pokemon. Live-action Pokemon. Live-action Pokemon.
It finally happened. It finally happened.
It's the live-action adaptation of Detective Pikachu, who was voiced by Ryan Reynolds, of all people in the world.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I can't listen to that. I watched the trailer, I was thinking, Deadpool, what are you doing?
The thing is, you expect it gets to the end of the movie, and it's just Deadpool, crawls out of Pikachu somehow.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting in some kind of horrifying David Cronenberg type.
Yeah, I saw a bit of a fan made clip of that trailer where they just replaced all the Pikachu's voice with Danny DeVito.
Yeah,
beautiful. It was beautiful.
That was the fan's choice, and to be honest, I reckon Danny DeVito would do a decent job. But the thing is, you've got this cute, furry, cuddly little rat-like electric thing, and the voice of a desperate over 50-year-old bloke. And the thing is, Danny DeVito has a short guy's voice.
Hang on. He's not that desperate anymore, not since Deadpool happened. Deadpool and Deadpool 2 made all the money. There's no way he's desperate anymore.
Oh, no, I'm saying Danny DeVito is the desperate one.
Oh, Danny DeVito, yeah. Danny DeVito's, he's a great actor. I don't know why people don't cast him in more films.
You know, I reckon he should be in the new Space Jam movie.
Yes, it has to happen.
Well, the thing is, it's... We've seen plenty of these live-action animation crossovers. They've been around for a long, long time. One of the most technically brilliant ones that I've seen, and it still holds up today, is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Because they didn't just do the...
Bob Hoskins.
Well, it's Bob Hoskins, but they didn't just do the mix of live-action and animation. They had some practical effects in there to lend to the idea that there was this blending of these two different worlds, you know?
Now, we think, will they do that with Pokemon? Because from what we've seen, and especially fan reaction, this is the age of social media has absolutely ruined things for me. And I know they say, oh, we're all connected, oh, and all this. But people kicking off about a furry Jigglypuff, it's got to be one of the most dumbest things to be outraged at.
I don't really care about the furry Jigglypuff. I'm just more amused by the memes. It's just about horrifying Mr. Mime looks.
Oh, that's a good thing. No, the thing is, the designs have absolutely no right looking as good as they do, in my opinion here, because everybody expected, you know, because the cartoons, like the 2D, if they sat there drawing like fur on them and whatnot, you would be barely through the fourth season of Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's you know, they've got to be 2D, they've got to be smooth, they've got to have a certain way. But to bring it into the 3D world, then you've got to look at texture, you've got to look at, well, obviously Pikachu's a mouse, so it's got to have, like, short fur on it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Then they put short fur on it, fine. Jigglypuff is, from what we understand, an alien from outer space who evolves with a moonstone who likes karaoke. So why not? It's always had that little twirly quiff. What would they rather have?
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious about Pokemon like Gyarados, Squirtle, that sort of thing.
Yep. Well, I think the Gyarados, they're doing like scales and whatnot. The Charizard, which we see in the trailer, I believe Charizard's slightly furry.
Yeah.
But like short fur, like, I know it's a dragon type and whatnot, but you know, from what we understand, dinosaurs had feathers, so why not, you know, flies?
Yeah.
We're suspending disbelief here because obviously it's Pokemon. If we want to have like realism, let's have like a load of Voltorb running the electrical grid, probably forcibly as well by humanity because we're scumbags.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing with the Pokemon live action trailer. I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest Pokemon fan, as you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the games are basically repetitions of the games. Pokemon Go was a variation. I understood it, and people went out and enjoyed it, and more power to them. If I want to go out for a walk, I'll go out for a walk. I don't need the incentive of playing a game while I'm going out for a walk.
Yeah, but you're old. You don't know the youth, do you?
I just listen to music and go for a walk.
The things you have to dangle in front of the youth of today to get them anywhere.
Yes, which is why the survivability of the species is decreasing, but we won't go there. Anyway, all I can say about live-action animation crossovers is there are some that are great, some that are good, and many, 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 many that are bad. Take the Smurfs, for example.
Neil Patrick Harris Smurfs?
Yes.
Patrick Harris?
Yes.
Did he lower himself?
Oh, he did. He did. He did. Maybe he was just hoping he could teabag a Smurf. I don't know. you may have to cut that joke.
Don't cut it. We're making the episode title. Teabagging Smurfs. Neil Patrick Harris teabagging Smurfs.
But, I mean, the thing is, the live-action animation crossover, it actually goes back to the year 1900. Believe it or not, there was a silent film in 1900 called The Enchanted Drawing, which was directed by J. Stuart Blackton, and it contained the first animated sequences recorded on standard picture film, which has led to Blackton being considered the father of American animation, long before Walt Disney. And then in the 1910s, you had stuff like Out of the Inkwell and Gertie the Dinosaur. 1920s, you had Bosco the Tail-Ink Kid. 1930s, you had stuff like King of Jazz. King Kong, for example, was one of those ones where you had animation. And people often forget that claymation is a form of animation and stop-motion animation.
They have the early Godzillas and whatnot as well.
Yeah, the early Godzillas, the early King Kongs. You know, all those Ray Harryhausen movies. They're all a blend of animation and live action. So things like, you remember the Clash of the Titans movie? The original one, not the crappy remake?
Oh, the great big Cyclops.
No, that was Jason and the Argonauts. All of those movies are animation, live action, crossovers. And then obviously you had, in the 1940s, you had stuff like Fantasia. And the one that's heavily, heavily banned now, you can't watch it now because it's deemed far too racist. Do you know which one I'm on about?
Song of the South?
Yep, I was going to go, zippity-doo-dah.
You're gonna get lynch mob at your door for that.
Nah. Well, the social justice warriors. How dare you?
But I mean,
it happened. Humanity happened.
Yeah, this is the thing. You had it all the way through. 1940s was a bit of a boom period, and then the 1960s was another one with Mary Poppins, the Pink Panther, stuff like that. And that was when you started getting a lot of them through. And then the 1970s, they just literally exploded all over
Pete's
the place.
Dragon, picking up some boomsticks. Yeah.
The Godzilla movies had really started taking off by then. You had the Sinbad movies. They were really, really coming into their own. The Monty Python movies were coming into their own as well. You had Eraserhead. One of the scenes in Eraserhead is an animated scene. You had the Pink Panther movies, stuff like that. I remember the Water Babies. I used to love that movie when I was a kid. 1980s, you had Xanadu.
Olivia Newton-John did the Xanadu.
Yeah, Olivia Newton-John. There's an animated sequence in there. you had The Evil Dead. It's got stop-motion scenes. Tron, need I say more? You had various Winnie the Pooh movies. Cannonball Run 2 apparently has animated sequences in. I don't remember them, but Ruthless People apparently has animated sequences in.
Yeah.
Flight of the Navigator, I do remember that. I love that film, by the way. Mannequin? I don't remember the animated sequences in Mannequin. I think they were in the title.
It was Kim Cattrall that was in it? She was anytime she like morphed or what have you or moved, and I don't know, it was like little cartoony bits here and there, but it wasn't like noticeable. Don't tell anybody I watched anything like that.
Thing is, all of these were kind of bitty bits, except for the Ray Harryhausen stuff and the monster and the Godzilla stuff, you know, the actual giant monster stuff, right? They were all bitty bits until you had Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where it was an actual integral part of the film.
Yeah.
And that's where I think everything changed. And that's where you started looking at animated movies and saying, well, actually, you can blend live action and animation and make a whole complete movie. Gremlins kind of beat Who Framed Roger Rabbit to the punch with all of the puppet gremlins and everything like that, because that is still a form of animation. But in terms of hand-drawn animation, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was there first. And then everything else just followed, you know. You've got just so many.
I think it's necessary to mention the masterpiece that is Space Jam.
Yeah, Space Jam was there. I found sometimes I wonder with the direction, like you were saying with the Pokemon one, with it more the technology is like more 3D, CGI. Like obviously each Pokemon has its own special moves. It's a weird thing to think of, like how far it came from like the flat 2D animation.
Well, it has.
I don't know. It might have worked, but I'm curious to see if this, you know, this sort of like CGI 3D animation Pokemon interacting with the actual real world in the context of the film will work.
Well, that's it. There's a lot of like elemental like attacks or different quirks that they have.
It will, for two reasons. Number one, and the biggest reason, is Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park changed the ball game for CG animation in movies, with realistic looking dinosaurs in an actual major Hollywood movie.
Well, realistic at the time of research.
Yeah, at the time of research. But this is the thing. Jurassic Park literally set the benchmark for the 90s with just how advanced the CG was for that time. I remember when I went to see it in the cinema when I was in London, and it was this spectacle. There wasn't any other movie around like it. And yeah, okay, it's not aged well as a movie, but it's still leaps and bounds better than the Smurfs movie. Sorry, Neil. I love you as an actor. I think you're great, but Smurfs was not a high point for you.
I was just sitting there and they say, yeah, I'm looking for a podcast to do with animation. Oh, one from Britain. How exotic. Hey, they're talking about me.
And he goes, oh.
Oh. But this is why he doesn't listen to British stuff.
Yeah. You've got so many from the 90s, because the 90s, again, was a boom period. You got James and the Giant Peach, Space Jam, 101 Dalmatians, Casper, A Spirited Beginning, stuff like that. You've got Babe, A Pig in the City.
Just stick with Babe. We'll forget about Pig in the City.
I had no idea what was going on in Pig in the City the first time.
It's a sheepdog, like trials, like in a farm, and then all of a sudden it's in an inner city apartment run by animals.
Yeah. I'll tell you, there was a great one from the 90s, which loads of people forget about. It had Tommy Lee Jones in as an action figure.
Oh, Small Soldiers.
Yeah, it's a cracking film.
I remember that one, I.
So it was just after Toy Story, a couple of years after Toy Story, you had Small Soldiers. And we had, like, the nice toys, but now you had the toys literally starting a war.
Weaponized toys, military-grade microchips.
Yeah, but the thing is,
organized scum.
We'd kind of seen that before, just a little bit before Small Soldiers, in that Robin Williams movie, Toys.
Yeah.
That was weird as well.
That was a bizarre film.
Bizarre as out. There was the funeral part where it's like the chattering teeth and the barrel of the monkeys and whatnot. It's like, what?
Also, who can forget the classic film from the year 2000? That absolute classic, The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I like that one.
We have discussed this previously on the podcast.
We have, because they're bringing it back.
Yeah. Are they?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
It might be something you'll enjoy.
Oh my god. This right, just from the noughties, right? Some of the films on this, one of them is a film I didn't expect to see on this list, and now that I've seen it, I actually remember the sequence as well. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's an experience, let's put it that way. So you have stuff like How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Osmosis Jones, Monkey Bone, Freddy Got Fingered, Cats and Dogs, you know, stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah.
But then, in the middle of it all, you've got Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Nah.
You guys sounds haven't
like,
seen that,
sounds like
you?
A weird BDSM movie.
Kind of is. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is an American musical comedy drama from 2001, and it's basically, it follows a transgender East German singer called Hedwig Robinson, who is the lead singer of a fictional rock band, and the way he was snuck out of East Germany was to have a transgender operation to turn him into a woman, which kind of went wrong, and so their hit record is The Angry Inch, which has the chorus, if I remember rightly, 6 inches born and 5 inches back, I've got an angry inch.
Okay. Well,
this was live-action animation adaptation.
It had some animated sequences in there.
All right.
So it's not on the level of... I'll be honest, there are very few on the level of Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Space Jam and stuff like that. Scooby-Doo, stuff like that.
Oh,
you know?
God, the live-action Scooby-Doo.
Nice.
Oh, God. Vietnam flashbacks.
Well, this is the thing. We've always used animation in interesting ways when it comes to live-action movies. Pokemon movie, I'll give it a chance.
You said that about Teen Titans Go to the Movies. You watched it yet?
I'm waiting for our review copy of it.
God, oh, you weird to watch it.
There's Stuart Little as well. It's like, oh, can you just imagine that, being a kid at the orphanage where Stuart Little's at, and these parents come in and just choose a mouse over you? That must be awful.
I'm sorry, Gwendolyn, but the mouse just had more to offer.
You know, it's just so cute eating that seed. Can you eat a seed like that?
Things that make so much sense as kids. Just like you think about them now going, well, why is this happening?
Well, when you think Hugh Laurie and then you remember he was House. See, you think, did the dad, Stuart Little's dad, become House? Did Stuart Little die and then he like just like snapped? See, in some way to try and heal his mouse son, he became a doctor, insane doctor.
I never understood, in the entirety of the House series, why nobody slipped in a bingo joke.
I 23, House!
Just a little bingo joke, so some guy's just sitting there watching TV and making and stamping a piece of paper, and then all of a sudden stands up and shouts, House! And the House goes in and goes, what? He goes, no, bingo.
Sounds like a Stooges skit then.
Exactly. Anyway, Pokemon live action. That's what we were talking about.
When we went through the history of animation and live action.
Yeah, Pokemon, we've gone through the history of live action and animation crossovers.
Yeah, but I bet you Roger Rabbit didn't get the crap that the Pokemon's got.
Yeah, but think about it.
Modern-day fandoms. Fandoms ruin everything.
Thing is, if Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out now, it probably would get a lot of stick. Number one for Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah.
Okay. They would use phrases like, oh, it's objectifying women, that sort of thing. Number two, you have a baby smoking a cigar in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Well, you see that in Sunderland all the time?
That guy, like, they're going to fall down. 10 men fall, perhaps, but not a cigar. You think we're joking, though? The UK is absolutely the prime. If you're listening from another country, the UK, the UN came and visited Newcastle, which is next to Sunderland, and said it's the worst deprivation he's seen in the first world ever. That's our government says, well, we just don't believe that. But, you know, yes, baby smoking like tobacco is an actual thing in this country. And no one bats an eyelid.
Yeah.
There's still find a way to kick off about it in Roger Rabbit, like.
Oh, everything. It's one of them things, like, attitudes have changed so much, and I'm all for, like, the evolution of understanding and that, but when people, like, try and deny outright that, you know, what went on in the past was just wrong, it's like, yeah, but it sold, like, millions of dollars at the box office.
Well, yeah, it's not even just that, it's like, we're going back in time, like, 40-odd years and such, like, society was entirely different at the time. You can get away with having a baby smoking a cigar in a film and no one bat an eyelid.
it kind of makes us a bit about the Pokemon movie, because it's Detective Pikachu, and obviously he's a detective, so crime's going to be an element.
Well, crime is an element, because the kid's dad is either dead or missing.
Oh, he was a cop. Yeah, he's dead or missing, but he was a cop. So this is the thing. Will we see a darker Pokemon? Because somebody did an animated short, I think it was on YouTube, and it was like a dark live-action version where like Team Rocket were actual badasses and not just like punchlines. And I've got to wonder, like, are they going to go in that direction with this one? Like, Pikachu just sits down and it's like, you know, I'm one day from retirement or something. I mean, the scene with Mr. Mime was it was frightening, and that's the thing. Like, live action Pokemon are frightening. You know, they're no longer these little 80x80 pixel like sprites on your computer in black and white or on your Game Boy or what have you. They're not that anymore. It's the fans have like grew so much with them, and we're actually seeing like anatomically correct Pokemon.
No, we don't want to see anatomically correct Pokemon.
No, no.
From that trailer, the one thing that I take home, the one thing that gave me comfort, and to be honest, the main reason I will see it, is just the angry Jigglypuff.
That's right. It's fun seeing these little characters, because we've seen them in the cartoons, we've seen them on the game, now we get to see them full 3D furry forms.
I love the way they've animated the angry Jigglypuff, and I especially like, you know, that curl of hair, like Superman's curl of hair.
See, it's that it is. It's they've done like the designs. I think absolutely spot on, and they're far exceed my expectations. And I think like they've done a great job. But you know, morons who don't get out of the house on the internet would disagree, because that's basically their existence.
Leaving that to one side, very quick question just to end this: if you could choose any movie or series, animated movie or series or video game, that could work as a live-action animation crossover, what would it be?
Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight?
I don't know why that popped in my head, but gut instinct says Shovel Knight would do really well. But I think it's just because the premise is a little bit, like, absurd. So it's got a decent fan base, like that, or Undertale kind of thing, like that kind of area. But I'm trying to think of, like, something, like, more mainstream and popular, but also with, like, that would enhance the elements of animation in it.
See, I'm kind of along your lines. I would have gone with something like Medieval or Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, like a D&D kind of setting pops up, right?
Yeah.
With Medieval or Ghosts and Goblins or Ghouls and Ghosts, whichever one you want to go with, you've basically got the knight-type character. With Ghosts and Goblins, the animated stuff would be obviously the skeletons and the ghosts and stuff like that. So it would rely heavily on animated sequences, CG animated sequences. Medieval, it would be the main character themselves who's basically CG, so it'd be like Thanos.
I'd go for something, probably something like Madoka Magica, where the Latin and you know, the magical things were probably the animated parts.
All right, so when they're actually fighting.
Are we looking at like a Western or an Eastern audience for this?
I'm not sure, but like, for me, and the way I envision it, how it would work, and that would be like, you wouldn't go into the lab from that, and that's where the animation would be. So a little bit like in the original version adaptation, such a little bit like that, because like, even in the actual animations of the lab room, they've got like so much detail to them and so much surrealism to them. I think it would work very well in the live action setting as well.
An interesting one to bring up here. Have you guys actually seen the Mushishi movie?
I don't think I have.
Can't say I have.
Okay. The Mushishi movie was an interesting experiment, I suppose you'd call it, taking the idea of Mushishi and making it a live-action movie. If we're being broad with the whole idea of live-action animation as history kind of looks at it, then it would fall into the live-action animation category, because it had loads of things that were animated in the film, but were actually still central to the film. All the mushy parts were, well, mushy as in the Japanese term mushy, not mushy as in mushy peas, right? All of those were animated, and that's what Ginkgo deals with.
Mm-hmm.
That one was an interesting one, but that's already been done. I tell a lie, there is one that I'd like to see. If they ever did it, I would be amazed, astonished, and I don't think they'd ever manage it. I don't think it's one that you'll ever see as a live-action film. Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
It might. Are they making a live-action Gundam?
They were talking about it, but they've been talking about it for years.
Because after they did that whole thing of having Gundam on the Ready Player One, I think they're going to do like a live-action mech. And I think, you know, Pacific Rim has had relative success. I wouldn't say it's a really good movie, Pacific Rim.
Yeah, Gundam is getting a live-action movie. Legendary Pictures is apparently going to be making it, but I envision them running into a lot of problems.
It's going to take a lot of, like, building, and I mean, the budget alone for most Hollywood movies is ridiculous, but for the kind of specialized, like, mech building that they're going to need to do.
It's already been done. Michael Bay already did it with the Transformers films.
Aye.
And this is the thing. I think now, yes, we can see something that is a decent live-action Gundam movie. The problem isn't going to be the mechs. I think the problem is going to be the westernization of the Gundam storyline, because they will inevitably set the story in America. They will make all sorts of changes.
Cultural appropriation will be brought up. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. But the thing is,
even if they go the whole Xeon route,
regardless of which route they go down, someone's going to shout cultural appropriation. But if you look at the main character of the original Gundam series, Amuro Ray, he's not Japanese.
Fair point.
I mean, look at his hair, for crying out loud.
It'd be fun to see who they can cast for that, actually. I think there's a decent amount of talent out there, but I don't know if the checkbooks are that big.
With stuff like this, I would prefer it if they did what Marvel did with the Marvel films and took risks with new actors.
Oh, definitely, I'd like to see that.
Tom Holland has to be the biggest gamble and the biggest payday ever.
No. Do you know the biggest gamble and the biggest payday ever for Marvel?
Michael B. Jordan?
Nope.
Oh, well, then.
It was Robert Downey Jr. Because don't forget, when Iron Man first came out, where was Robert Downey Jr.'s career? He was coming off the back of all sorts of problems, and he'd only made a couple of films. I think he'd done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and maybe one other film, and then Iron Man happened. But his career was basically not really going anywhere, was it?
Oh, no, he was in constant trouble with the law, and he had, like, substance abuse problems.
Yeah. And then Iron Man happened, and all of a sudden he had this massive change in his life.
Which is kind of ironic, considering Iron Man is a deeply disturbed, like, individual at heart.
I think there's a lot of parallels between Tony Stark's character and Robert Downey Jr.'s life.
It's like one of them custom ones, like we say with Ryan Reynolds, he's the only Deadpool. He was the only option for Deadpool.
Yeah. I can't see them casting anyone else as Tony Stark. I think Robert Downey Jr. will be Tony Stark all the way through. There won't be any other Tony Stark. As long as the Marvel Cinematic Universe exists, it'll be Robert Downey Jr. I reckon they will change Iron Man to Iron Heart.
They've got to at some point.
Yeah, so Riri Williams will take over, but I reckon Robert Downey Jr. will still be Iron Man. Anyway, we've moved on to superheroes, so that's obvious that we need to switch gears and get into our featured animations, cartoons, anime, mainly anime this week.
Cat in the Hat.
Don't you dare.
Oh, you're a dirty hoe.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare darken my door with the Cat in the Hat.
Cinematic masterpiece that it was.
Beautiful Hollywood Oscars all over.
Oh, Mike, where did
thing
you
one and thing two? Well, I see he likes to be referred to as Chocolate Thunder.
All I can say about the Cat in the Hat is, oh, Mike, nobody wants to be like you, do they? Because that was the phrase for Michael Jordan, wasn't it? Everyone wants to be like Mike. But then Mike Myers came along and was like, no one wants to be like you. What happened, Mike? Seriously, what happened? You went from So I Married an Axe Murderer and Wayne's World to The Cat in the Hat. Where did it all go?
Austin Powers, baby.
That was the next level for me.
The original Austin Powers movie was a fun movie. The sequels were a bit kind of, yeah, No.
They could have took Goldmember in a different direction. I remember Austin Powers 2 had a great soundtrack, though.
I love gold.
Okay, now it's time for our featured animation, anime mainly this week. So, Tucky, take it away.
Sorry. My anime to review this week is being Fireworks, which is a movie rather than an actual series, which is great considering Twin Star Exorcist took us like 50 episodes and I'm never getting that time back. But Fireworks, luckily for me, hour and a half, easy going. So this is, it's a weird one. It's kind of, would you call it like a fantasy drama, slice of life?
Is it just called Fireworks?
Well, Fireworks, no, full name for it is Fireworks, Should We See It From the Side or the Bottom?
That's a very, very...
suggestive.
Tagline, yes.
My girlfriend, do you want to see her from the side or our bottom?
My horse. My cactus.
So the way you think about this is, well, the basic overhaul is that school kids, high school kids, you know, well, high school, junior school, whatever. School kids in Japan, you know, that old formula that just keeps winning and winning and winning and winning for some reason. Even it doesn't, but, you know, they keep using it because apparently Japanese high schools are the most interesting places in the universe. Imagine being an alien coming down, seeing an anime for the first time, what you would think of, like, high schools in Japan.
Do you know, there is actually a show like that I reviewed a while ago. Is that Genndy Tartakovsky show? Symbionic Titan. That's literally what happens. The aliens take refuge on Earth and discover that high schools are apparently the best place for them to mingle in.
I'm in despair. You know, Brexit, nah, that's not going to get us down. That kind of crap, aye. Oh, dear. But it's basically school, and you've got the, I'd say, protagonist, Norimichi. His friend Yusuke and their classmate, like, who's a girl, Nazuna. I hope I'm pronouncing it right anyway. So it starts off like pretty basic. Norimichi and Yusuke apparently has a crush on Nazuna, and they end up poolside cleaning the pool. She's there just chilling out for some reason. I think it's explained that she's moving town. So she's at that age where a lot of kind of like stuff at home isn't going as well. Like, she doesn't want to move. Her ma's getting remarried and moving in with a new man. And it's kind of that teenage angsty, oh, I'm going to run away thing. And it's that mixed in with a little bit of fantasy, a lot of Lighthouse, not the Lighthouse family or anything like that, but Lighthouse, like a Lighthouse, which seems to be under construction a lot. But yeah, it's a weird one to explain because Nazuna wants to run away and she starts off with a race against the two guys, and basically it's like silly childish bets. Like, you know, oh, if I win the race, you know, you get to do what I say. And Yusuke wins the race and Norimichi's like done his ankle in on the starter block. And she asks Yusuke out for the night because there's a festival with fireworks, because of course there is. It's a summer festival episode. And I don't know, because I'm stumped for this. I'm stumped. It's kind of like, you know, Girl Who Leapt Through Time?
Yeah.
You know how she fell on a walnut and the walnut sent her back? Well, it was like a time walnut.
It was a magical nut.
Yeah. But that's the title. So many people listen. The magical nut. But
anime is magical nuts.
It's no nut November. You're not allowed to say nut. It's a because for me it was Girl Who Leapt Through Time. That was done, and this kind of like throws a bit of like angsty teenage runaway into it. And it's basically the same thing, just with a lighthouse. I can't see. I liked watching this movie. Don't get us wrong. The animation was great. The soundtrack, you know, it's got the relaxing music going on. It's got enough to grab your attention.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, it's kind of like the silence of Doctor Who. fascinating and terrifying when you're looking at it straight and direct. But as soon as you turn away, you know, you forget that you even, you know, it existed. It's one of them kind of ones. And for me, the plot was very, very similar to Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which, and me, I like originality. I like something different, something that'll, you know, that'll make you feel. But this was very much Girl Who Leapt Through Time, only without the magical time traveling nut. It was a marble, a lighthouse in a marble or something. And
that's very, what's that game called? Bioshock. It's very Bioshock Infinite. At the end of Bioshock Infinite, when you basically break through the dimensional barrier, you see the lighthouse, and Elizabeth says to you, there's always a man, there's always the lighthouse. And then you have like the various things of like multiple Elizabeths drowning you and various things like that.
Sliding doors a bit in it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is, he gets angry. He sees, like, basically, like I say, this Nazuna. She's trying to run away from her mother from the social situation that's going on there. And she tries to drag Noromichi along with her. And Noromichi's always, like, kind of failing at different points. Like, and when he fails, all he does is he picks up this, like, marble which Nazuna had. He flings it angrily, and it takes him back to where he wishes. So it's like a wishing kind of lighthouse marble thing. Oh,
so he flings his marble and it takes him back to where he
to where he wants. Yeah, the mysterious lighthouse wishing marble or something. It's like I say, it's basically the walnut. But he gets to go back to certain points in time. Like the first instance he uses it, he wants to go back and win that race. So she asks him out, and then they do that, and then they get to the train platform. Then the mother still comes barreling out of nowhere and drags her away. So he flings the marble again, bang, reset it. You know, he can now get onto the train properly. Then he gets seen by his mates who are off to watch the fireworks. And this is where the title comes in, because his friends are like, oh, fireworks, are they flat or are they round? And so they go on this whole Stand By Me kind of like quest, where they're walking a long distance to get to this lighthouse to see these fireworks set off from the island to finally prove to one another that, you know, fireworks are either flat or they're round. And it's a pointless quest because everybody knows fireworks are round. I'll tell you what, if these kids had mobile phones, they could have just went on Google and went, there you go, fireworks are round.
This is true.
you know, big plot hole there. Modern technology. Oh, look, we have evidence. But no, they want to go on this whole quest, and they go there, and like the runaway stories alongside it, and sometimes it overlaps, but it's the same story told 4 or 5 times over, just with a slightly different tweak. And then they get this confusing part, and this is the big, like, what's going on here? When Nazuna talks about her father, because one day he's there, and the next day he's not. But the clip is her father face down in the water, holding the magical lighthouse time traveling marble thing, and nothing's ever said about that. It's just like, so this marble's her dad's. Is it her dad in the marble? Is his spirit there trying to help his daughter, even though he's like face down in the water dead?
Hmm.
You know what's the story with that? It just never touches on it, and I'm just sitting here like, well, I would have liked a bit more context here, because he's lying there dead with this marble. I mean, did he steal it from an alien? What's going on? You know, that's a much more interesting tangent you could have took it on, you know, instead of this like bratty little kid flinging it just because he wants to get his rocks off. It's infuriating. And like I say, it is a good movie to watch. Bens were watching it with us. They were just quiet as out. And As I got to the end of it, and I thought, you know, well, I've got to say something about this. I felt angry. It's like it's a relaxing movie, but I came away from it angry, because it's so many plot holes, and it's like I say, it feels like a tale that's been told before in Girl Who Leapt Through Time, or you know, it's got a lot of similarities to it, and I don't really feel like, you know, the whole high school kid who can travel back into different points in his existence just to try and tweak things so he can run away with some lass who's moving town anyway. And that's the thing. That's how it ended, because in each different reality, the fireworks like exploded differently. And that's how he knew he was in a different reality, like different kind of parallel timeline thing. You know, in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And he's like, he got the chalkboard and he's like, Marty, we were on this line here. And somehow reality has skewed this line and we're parallel to it. That one. It was kind of like that. And each different parallel line that he created, fireworks explode differently for some reason. I think the first time he saw fireworks, they actually were exploding flat. He's like, no, this isn't right. And I think then he gets struck by the lighthouse.
So it's basically high school romantic comedy Steins Gate.
Yeah. But he's not going back. He's not keep traveling back to correct his mistakes. He keeps going forward, making more mistakes.
Yeah, because he's a kid.
And at the end, nothing's learnt. The last moves town and, you know, they're doing schoolwork. I don't know what happened to the marble at the end of it, you know. But fireworks explode normally. The lighthouse dome that appears over the last reality breaks and memories are showered on them. And it's just, yeah, it's good to look at. It's visually good. But the plot leaves you like, well, what the hell have I just watched? I mean, I'd definitely recommend to watch it, but there's a reason it got 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Well, that's as good a place to jump in there now. Do you want to go next and we bookend it with movies, or do you want me to go next, Andrew?
I can go next. I've re-familiarised myself with this to be able to talk about it. I'm getting the flashbacks now. It's all coming back to me. Dark Thursday. Oh, wait, no, that was the night before.
Okay, Andrew, right. So you got Digimon Tamers, haven't you?
Yes, Digimon Tamers. The third season of the Digimon anime. And when I first saw this, when it was broadcasting on TV all those years ago, it was like 2001, 2002, and Fox Kids. I actually really liked it. I really enjoyed it the first time around, and I've seen it a couple of times since, and I still enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I've only seen about three, maybe four series of Digimon. The last one I actually saw was Digimon Try, which is like a sequel to the original.
Yeah.
But Digimon Tamers is a complete different kettle of fish. It's different continuity, different storyline.
So does it continue on from like the first and second season of Digimon, or does it involve like totally new characters?
Totally new characters. In Digimon Tamers, the first two seasons are connected in a way. Basically, it's an anime within an anime. And the whole thing about Tamers is a card game, Digimon card game. It revolves around the Digimon card game, which is based on the original Digimon from season 1 and 2.
So is the original Digimon now just a card game? Is it?
Yes.
Is
it Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game in an anime within an anime.
So, hang on. You got a card game within a card game within an anime within an anime.
Yeah.
I'm really confused. Are you sure you watch fireworks all right there, Ducky? Because this is...
is that what the Digimon staff did? Just fling this magical marble? I was like, right, let's start again, lads.
probably is, to be honest. That's how it starts off with. Like, it goes from like season 1 or 2, which were connected, you know, same storyline, same continuity. Then Digimon Tamers comes along, totally new series. But then you start, like in the first episode, you see them watching the TV. And it's an episode of Digimon Season 2. I was like, what's going on here? What?
So they're watching the reality, which is a card game within their anime.
Yeah.
Or in their reality, Digimon is reality TV. It's like, I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here.
I've got to watch the 4th, 5th, and 6th Digimon Tri movie, so...
I still need to watch them out, to be honest. I've only seen the first three.
Just listen to me reviews of them and you'll save time.
All right, back to Tamers then.
Back to Tamers, yeah. The whole thing revolves around the Digimon franchise in the series, which is card games and video games and such. The card games play a very important role within the series. It revolves around a group of 10-year-olds. It's an anime. 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds.
Why is it always like pre-teens? It's like, you know, they're not responsible enough to vote. They can't drink alcohol. But my God, let's send them out in the world on their own.
I don't understand this the trope of anime for this. It always revolves around a group of stalwart outcast 10 and 12 year olds. But yeah, right. So, revolves around these kids. Takato, Henry, and Rika.
Henry.
Not Henry. Henry Hoover.
See, I was going to make a vacuum cleaner joke there, but I thought, nah, too easy. Too easy.
I would have sucked anyway.
Ah, Tucky. That one was awful. That was no.
Oh, that was bad. That was very bad.
Anyway,
I did the pointy finger thing. You couldn't see it, but I was like, ah.
Anyway.
I don't have to carry on that. Right. It revolves around the stalwart kids and that are outcast from society that are obsessed with the card game. Kids obsessed with card games and video games is how the outcast is a normal thing. Yes, I know.
This is what I never understood. There was this massive outpouring of these type of shows from Japan around the same time. You had the Pokemon animated series.
Pokemon, Digimon, Monster Rancher.
Yeah, not just Pokemon, Digimon, Monster Rancher, and Yu-Gi-Oh! You also had Cardfight Vanguard.
Duel Masters.
Duel Masters was the funny one. Cardfight Vanguard took itself a bit too seriously.
I'm actually sat next to a monopoly of Duel Masters for some reason. Yeah. That's scary.
You had Beyblade, which was one of the big ones at the time.
Kai and his Russian connections.
Yeah. Beyblade managed to hold on for a lot longer than people thought it was going to.
Yeah.
I bought the merchandise. I bought a lot of Beyblade merchandise based on that. It was dinky little discs and that, but I had an absolute whale of a time with them.
This is the thing.
I got them banned from school.
Yeah, but this is the thing. When you look at the mechanics of, say, the Pokemon card game and then Beyblade, Beyblade has so much more going for it than Pokemon does.
Yeah.
It's much more interactive. So do your link cables and whatnot. This was proper battles. Like, you're in combat. Things will break.
Yeah, that was part of the fun of it. It wasn't just something that you bought and collected. It was something that you played and destroyed as well. It was kind of the best part of playing Conkers as a kid.
Yeah.
Mixed with
Beyblade, the Japanese Conkers.
Yeah. It was effectively, wasn't it?
The metal ones came along a couple of years after the franchise first kicked off. And
yeah,
the
metal ones.
Everything.
Oh, God, yeah. There were people still using plastic Beyblades who just, you destroy them.
Sorry, when it went off Digimon team, is that where?
Yeah.
It was a nice reflection on the past.
Yeah.
So is it a nice card game going on? I mean, do they still
the card game's only one element of the series. Like, they use the card games, the cards do play a role in the series. But the series doesn't say that Yu-Gi-Oh! Where the entire series is about them playing cards and dueling against each other. The card game's just a trope of the series.
Okay.
Because the whole thing's about the actual Digimon themselves and how they've got, like, each individual character has their own individual Digimon partner. Digimon Biomerge, as in they come from the Digimon world into the real world, somehow, anime science, whatever, and there is a secret government plot to make sure they don't. Russian connections.
So they teleport from the Digiworld to the real world.
How it's done in that is they just bollocks the way through about how exactly to do it, but the fact that this is happening, it all revolves around this one Digimon called Calamon. Calamon plays a very important role in the series, but all it does is just go around wanting to eat junk food.
Okay, so question then. You say the Digimon are coming into the human world, however they are. So is this like America and illegal immigrants where they sneak over the fence and then if the American authorities catch them, they deport them straight away?
Kinda. I mean, what happens in that is the children when they're Digimon fight the Digimon that are coming in from the Digimon world. They get stronger and just they show like, oh no, look at me, I'm killing Digimon.
See, that's one of the things that I really dislike about these shows is just the fact that it's just the casual cruelty. Oh, God,
yeah.
We have to kill these things or beat the crap out of these things to make ourselves stronger.
Well, not just that. And that. First, you show them as composed and mature 10, 12-year-olds. Then all the standard 10, 12-year-olds taking the legs off spiders.
Well, it's the thing for me, I mean, I remember watching this a while back. And I say it a while back. Because I was a fan of, like, the original Digimon series. And then,
yeah,
like, they brought this out and I was like, oh, you know, I watched it a bit. But I kind of, like, the childish side of us, every time it was, like, they had the card readers.
Yeah.
With D powers. And they D'd everything. Like, oh, you want your D power. And I'm laughing, like,
yeah.
When you said they D'd everything, I was going to reply with, so everything was D'd?
Yes, everything was D'd. You had your D York, you had your D Rice, you had your...
No, it was a death joke, man. It was a death joke.
Mine was a dick joke.
Mine was a death joke, because that's how you said D'd dead last time I spoke to you about it, Ducky. They all D'd.
All D'd. Me won't survive.
Is this gonna be an offshoot where we just take the make a Tuckers accent?
No, that's the piss if you want. I'll have the last laugh. But for me, the original Digimon series card and like stuff like this is like Yu-Gi-Oh 5Ds for me.
Yeah,
it was just like, well, you took
it takes something to get into. It's a much darker toned, probably more violent series than the first two. You take away a lot of the childish, lighthearted innocence that made the first two series what they were. It's a totally different set of tropes, it's a totally different format, totally different direction as the original two series. And for some people, this is where the series started to diverge away from what made Digimon what it was for them.
So, you say it's darker, but is it on the same level as something like, say, Shadow Star Narutaru? Because I don't think it is.
Nah. Compared to the original two series, it's darker.
All right. Compared to Shadow Star Narutaru, nothing is darker.
Cutting the hat.
No, even that pales in comparison. Have you guys actually watched Shadow Star Narutaru?
I don't know, I just want to see Cat in the Hat.
We recommended it to me quite a while back, actually.
Imagine you had Pokemon, Digimon, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
And you basically look at Pokemon and Digimon and you have Pikachu doing electric attacks. Now imagine if those electric attacks actually worked in the way that they should. So it's as if you were hit by a bolt of lightning and your insides were fried.
It's not just paralysis, it's full-on electrocution.
Yes.
Corpse Star Precious Child.
Yeah, that's Shadow Star Narutaru. It's basically the horror version of Pokemon.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's pretty gruesome.
The manga is better, but the anime is worth watching as well.
It's only 13 episodes, so that's like... You know, that's barely a day of your time.
Yeah, it's kind of brutal and bloody.
Yeah, well, the thing of his Digimon team is the reason why it's a fair bit darker than the usual tier series is it's based on the head writer for the series is someone called Chiaki Kunaka, who he's a Cthulhu Mythos fan, but he's also Seems to me he's done some other anime and such as this is heavily influenced by Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Okay.
So that seems to be the case. Yeah, he's a big Cthulhu and Neon Genesis Evangelion fan. God, I wonder if he was bullied as a kid.
Possibly. Maybe not. We're not sure.
Probably. I would recommend the series, but like if you like the first two Digimon series because it's lighthearted and fun and sugary or whatever, I wouldn't watch it. It would just put you off Digimon for life. But if you want to see something dark or something different in Digimon, a different sort of text setting, different tone, go for it. I liked it.
Well, it was aired over the time of the September 11th attacks as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And Americans were freaked out by, oh, is this reality? Is this not reality?
It's real life. Oh, yeah, this is just fantasy.
It's one of them weird things. You know, it's like, where were you when 9/11 happened? Well, I was watching Digimon Tamers. Imagine having that this year.
Yeah.
I remember where I was. I was in school dinner. And then I went home and I watched it. And it was weird.
Anyway, so, are you done now, Andrew?
Yeah, I'll say as much as I need to say about it.
Okay.
I'd recommend it if you're something different. But if you like the sugary, happy Digimon from like season 1 and 2, not for you.
Okay, right, so my turn. And Tucky, you remember that film that you watched earlier on in this episode? That film about fireworks?
I vaguely remember its name.
It was basically a lesson in futility because he didn't end up getting the girl, correct?
Well, it wasn't so much that he didn't end up getting the girl. It's just like, you know, we were told she was leaving town. She left town. You know, that's the end. You know, why was I watching?
The weird thing is, that could actually be a snapshot from what I'm covering, which is 5 centimeters per second. The Makoto Shinkai film from January 2007. Everyone who's seen this remembers one particular scene, because Makoto Shinkai does one thing really well. He does those really wide panoramic shots very, very well. And he's always got one in his films, right? He's always got several in his films. But the one that everyone remembers from 5 centimeters per second was the one where the main character, Takaki Tono, is sitting on the hill and he stands up and you see the planet rise up over the horizon.
I remember the cherry blossoms from it.
Yeah, the cherry blossoms. Well, that's how it starts. There are three real speaking characters in this film. Takaki Tono, Akari Shinohara, and Kanai Sumida. And it starts off with Akari Shinohara saying to Takaki, when they were kids, 5 centimeters per second, that's the speed at which a cherry blossom falls.
See, when I first heard the title, and it was just on the based on the title, I immediately thought of, like, you know how the story of 50cc?
Yeah.
The band. I thought it was something going to be, like, rude like that.
No, it's not. I know
it's something more beautiful, but my mind and the 50cc story absolutely ruined it before it started.
Are you on about 50cc or 10cc?
Is it
10cc?
Yeah. I was thinking, 50cc, 10cc you're on about, yeah. Anyway, it's interesting because there's been actually two English dubs of 5 centimeters per second. The first one was the ADV films dub, and you had Takaki being played by David Matranga, Akari being Akari being played by Hilary Haag, and Kanai being played by Serena Varghese. And in the Bang Zoom version, you have John Young Bosch playing Takaki, Erica Weinstein playing the young Akari and Tara Platt playing the old Akari, and Kira Buckland playing Kanai.
Mm-hmm.
The different actors bring different things to the role. And I'm going to talk about the difference in the two English dubs particularly, because the Japanese dub is very, very good. But first things first, the story. Takaki and Akari are childhood friends. She transfers into his elementary school in Tokyo. They grow close to each other. They have similar interests and attitudes, everything like that. And when they graduate from elementary school, Akari moves to a nearby prefecture of Tochigi due to her parents' jobs. And they're supposed to stay in touch by writing letters to each other. And he learns that his family are going to be moving to Kagoshima, which is on the other side of the country. He decides to go and see Akari, since they're going to be too far apart to visit each other. And he's already prepared a letter for Akari confessing his feelings for her, because he's had loads of opportunities to, but he hasn't really. But he loses the letter in a snowstorm, and trains delayed by several hours. They finally meet, share the first kiss. Then Takaki realizes that they're never going to be together again. And what you have after that, imagine you slotted fireworks in at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so Takaki is constantly going back in time to try and find some way for them to stay together, or for some way for them to have more time with each other, yada, yada, yada. But then you move on to episode 2, which is Cosmonaut, which is when you get that panoramic scene happening. And this is further on in time. Takaki is now in the third year of senior high in Tanegashima, and he's got a classmate called Kanai Sumida who is in love with him, and Takaki he's a bit of a dunce now. When it comes to relationships, he's a bit of a dunce. And the reason why is because he's still hung up on Akari. And he writes emails to her, but then deletes them, yada, yada, yada. Still hung up on her. And it's basically his first love has effectively, or the failure of his first love, has effectively poisoned his life for a while. And that's reflected in episode 3, which is 5 centimeters per second. The first episode is called Cherry Blossom, by the way, not 5 centimeters per second. The final episode is called 5 centimeters per second. And it's in 2008, 9 years later. Takaki is now working as a programmer in Tokyo. And Akari is preparing to get married. There's this really nice scene at the end of the film in which they kind of pass each other by, which, believe it or not, is kind of reminiscent of the scene in Your Name at the end. Right, you know, when they pass each other by and then they turn to look at each other.
Yeah, it's we got to expect familiar themes with being the same director.
The thing is, 5 centimeters per second, and we were discussing Makoto Shinkai's best film when we were talking about Your Name, and I made it clear my favorite film is The Place Promised in Our Early Days because it has everything in it. 5 centimeters per second isn't my favorite Makoto Shinkai film. But it is a good film. There's a lot of introspection. There's a lot of things happening on an emotional level. There's a lot for the viewer to infer. It's very, very beautifully animated. The art style is very, very good. The music is very good as well. The Japanese voice acting is, you know, the script, the dialogue for the Japanese dub is brilliant. Problems kind of occur with the English dub because you have this interpretation from the different actors, and you'll find that different actors have different inflections on certain words, which kind of change the meaning of what they're saying. So where one actor can say a particular sentence, another actor can say it and it sounds a bit snarkier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like subtle little tone changes.
Yeah, subtle little tonal changes between the actors, because they're playing the same role, but you've effectively got two different actors playing that role for the English dub. And so you have, it's weird because I'm not saying that the English dubs are bad. They're actually very, very good. But it's weird because you have this change, because you have this difference in the acting abilities, you actually get to experience something unusual for anime, which is you get to experience an English dub where you can cover a slightly broader emotional range than you normally would get with an animated movie, or especially with an anime movie, because the actors interpret these emotions differently. And that was interesting for me. Now, this is one of those films that, I'll be honest, I find it a depressing film. Okay, I find it kind of depressing, and I find it kind of slow. I understand that's the whole point of the film, but come on, Makoto. It's 5 centimeters per second. You can go a bit faster than that, you know?
10 mile an hour. It's about right.
I know it's the thing is, I know it's supposed to be a bittersweet film. I know it's supposed to be all sorts of things. I know all of that. But the head and the heart want what they want. And what they want isn't 5 centimeters per second. What they want is The Place Promised in Our Early Days. All you distributors out there, hope you're taking note. Give. Give. If you want an introspective and interesting anime film that does things in a different way from the usual anime movie, 5 centimeters per second, it's one of those movies where you were doing fireworks. Fireworks kind of owes a debt of gratitude to 5 centimeters per second, just like so many other films owe a debt of gratitude to films like 5 centimeters per second. And the reason for that is because these deeply emotional and complex movies wouldn't really be as well received as they are if it wasn't for films like 5 centimeters per second, and if it wasn't for directors like Makoto Shinkai, who, you know, their focus has always been these complex emotional themes. If you look at, say, Mamoru Hosoda, his main theme is family. Most of his films are about family. Well, not time travel, family. Family plays a bigger part for Mamoru Hosoda than anything else. If you look at Summer Wars, if you look at Wolf Children, if you look at even the Girl Who Let Through Time had themes of family and friendship.
It's a basic human identity, like, you know, friends and family. It's what does it all mean? It's just be happy with people that you're loved by, and you in return love them. It's...
Exactly. Whereas if you look at Miyazaki, most of his films have an environmental theme. Whereas if you look at Isao Takahata's films, right, they're kind of about family as well, but the aspect of family in Isao Takahata's films is it's a lot more of a kind of it's a lot more of a sharp and deep cut rather than the kind of heartwarming stuff that Mamoru Hosoda does. You've got those sorts of directors out there. I've got to say, one of the most experimental films that I've seen Makoto Shinkai do was that Children Who Chase Lost Voices from Deep Below. I can't remember the proper English title for it. I think it was called Road to Agartha or something like that. Do you guys remember that one?
No. And again, what did you say it was?
In English, it was called Road to Agartha or something like that.
That's just Igao. It's just Igao, not Road 2. Road 2 is if it's translated, yeah, but the English release was just Igao.
All right. Children Who Chase Lost Voices from Deep Below was the original title for it. Hoshi wa o Kodomo. That one is one of the more interesting Makoto Shinkai films for me because that one was very Ghibli-esque. He had the idea while he was in England. Watching that film, it was as if he was challenging himself to do something different, still retaining the deep, complex, emotional aspect of his films, but doing something a lot more fantastic. And I think he achieved that to a degree with Your Name. But yeah.
He had more sway on Your Name as well, because another sway was director and writer. He actually got to do photography, colour design, editing and whatnot. And in fact, all the ones that are really good.
So yeah, 5 centimeters per second. Should you watch it? Yes. If you're an anime fan, then yes, absolutely watch it.
It was a Blu-ray or DVD you had?
A Blu-ray. And it's got some extras. It's got interviews with the cast, and it's got an interview with Makoto Shinkai explaining that speed is the aspect of 5 centimeters per second that he wanted to promote the most. There's the speed of the train that's taking Takaki to see Akari. There's the speed of a letter being delivered. There's the speed of petals falling. There's the speed at which the two grow closer together and the speed at which they grow apart. So speed plays a big role in 5 centimeters per second, which is why the title of the film reflects that.
But the bus doesn't go over a certain number or it explodes. Or is it below?
No, not speed. It's 5 centimeters per second. Ah, Tucky, the buses don't go where you live, do they?
Hey, Brexit's going on and it's going swimmingly. We can't afford things like transport for people. But back to 5 centimeters per second, I'd say I got a while back when there were HMV used to get cheap, and I think I got the it was an ADV dub,
yeah,
not the Bang Zoom. Yeah. Funny name for a company, Bang Zoom. I always think that,
yeah,
always that sounds like something like when you trip over or something in your house,
David
Bang Zoom,
David, what's his name, Matranga, is it?
Yeah, David Matranga.
He was the voice of the ADV one. Ironically enough.
David Matranga, we've got him as a guest for SunnyCon Liverpool. People know him as Beholt Hoover in Attack on Titan, or Todoroki in My Hero Academia. But he's very, like I say, when we look at somebody who does like the voice acting, when we look at them for a guest, we do this like little video compilation because we got sick of people saying who every time. So it's like we put a little video compilation together. And for me, the surprising thing was it was Carson D. Carson in the Dirty Pair over here, I think it was. And that was surprising for me to think that he's done something like so long ago. He's also Space Captain Harlock.
Can I also point out he's Briarios in Appleseed?
Yes.
Yes.
That's in the video.
Yeah, he's Captain Harlock. Thing is, he's Harlock in the Harlock CG movie, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think it was Netflix who did it.
Yeah, he plays the role of Tomoya in Clannad. which I think you should have in that video.
I'm trying to find a clip for it. It's YouTube don't supply most of the time, so I have to go through other means. But it's he's been in quite a lot, and he's very good at having a very serious voice.
Yes, he is.
It's a weird thing because some voice actors, like say Brittany Karbowski, she's got the high pitched, like squeaky kind of like energetic voice, and I think she's the dubbing Slime reincarnation as a slime. She's actually the slime.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic to find out because she's going to be at Spinnick on Newcastle, and I love reincarnation from reading the manga.
Yeah. Well, hey. You know, you take my recommendation seriously. I don't recommend crap, do I?
No, you don't. And that's like, see, we think all these animes are like big and that, and we've been like, oh, well, we've been reading the manga, we've read the light novels of them like years ago. and now all of a sudden they're like animes. It's like, oh, now people are talking about them. Feel hipster when people talk about them.
It's a good feeling, though, isn't it?
About them first.
It's a good feeling, though, isn't it, Tucky?
Yeah, well, I've got Rise of the Shield Heroes coming out next season, I think it is.
VR MMO, you know, the middle-aged man one. We really want that one.
But like I said, that's coming out next season. I'm doing the Shield cosplay prop. I'm getting ahead of everyone. I'm going to start just doing cosplays from the mangas rather than wait for the anime to make it big.
Yeah.
Take that. I can become a professional cosplayer.
Well,
and
let's
get all
put it
the
way.
Likes.
If you'd listened to me, you could have had a Goblin Slayer cosplay ready.
No, I did listen to you. I've got the base of the helmet. It's just getting like the front grill right because it's weird.
Right.
Well, that's a different cosplay for a different day, and I didn't fancy wearing it on a hot day. But it's just weird. Because we're not on about the animes anymore. it's Sunnycon promotion. Let's be fair. And getting to meet these voice actors, it's nervous because we always have this thing. Like when we first meet them, do we shake the hand? Do we say hello? Do we hug them? it's always weird seeing them for a first time in person.
A rule of thumb, a handshake you can never go wrong with. Unless they're a complete and utter diva. Like, hey, don't shake hands, darling. You know, that's all.
No. I've never met anyone like that.
Well, a handshake, as a rule of thumb, a handshake can never fail because, you know, the worst they can do is say, we don't shake hands, darling, but that makes them look worse.
Yeah.
Right.
And also puts on notice that we've got like 6-7 days with these people in our employ.
Yeah.
And this is the direction.
But the thing is,
the voice actors are canny enough.
Yeah. If they give you a hug, fair play, you know, that's fine. If they give you a high five, even better.
It's got to be a crisp high five. Deadpool ruined that for me as well. It's got to be a crisp high five. I'll not accept any other high five.
What, not even a Scrubs high five?
No. Oof,
not even a Todd five?
No. No Todd fives.
Okay, on that note.
Yeah, just tickets available. Sunnycon Anime for Newcastle and Liverpool.
Yay.
Bit of a plug. www.sunnyconanimeexpo.com. I need to feed my children somehow. Universal credit's coming in and I'm going to have nothing for 4 months.
On that note, we are at the end of the show. Yeah. So if you want to catch up with any of our other shows, you'll find them on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all of our other stuff, Cinema Eclectica, 4Panel, Press X, the whole shebang. It's all on our website, along with our Patreon and our shop. Yeah, that's it from us for this week. We'll see you all next week with more things to talk about. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Tucky.
I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all later.